Welcome to your favorite voice of business psychology, the Psych and Success Podcast. I am your host, Kritika Kashyap. For today, we are two management psychologists having a deep conversation, and we are nerds in our own ways. So, if you are a person working in the corporate, this is going to be for you. Let's dive in. Hi, Teerna. I'm finally so glad that we are making this podcast. We are recording this because we had been thinking of recording this podcast for so long. And now we are here. How do you feel?
Honestly, I feel kind of funny.
Awful?
Not sure how to recognize my feelings at the moment. I am glad we are doing this, obviously, but I'm not used to speaking in front of a mic, and we've got really colorful mics here, so it's kind of hard to focus.
Yeah, we'll put a picture for the audience. But yeah, because we have had such amazing discussions, and after every single discussion, we're like, hey, why aren't we doing a podcast? I mean, people should hear us out and hear our discussion because it goes so in-depth and so informative, so valuable. I would first, I know about you. You are my colleague. You're my friend. Since a couple of years, we know each other and we are both management psychologists. So why don't, and I know that you were into physics before this. You were very keen astrophysicist. So what made you get into management psychology?
It's an interesting question, a question that I have been asked quite a lot. But I feel like I pause a moment before answering that every time. I think it's because I wanted to get into a field where I could see the difference that I'm making. Because honestly, I still like physics. The thing is, I like to learn new things and to understand integral parts of what makes our world the way it is, like the universe the way it is, which is by astrophysics. But then at some point, I also realized that the way we see the world also matters, which is why I got drawn towards psychology. Mm-hmm. And which is why I wanted to go into a field which helps me understand the human side of things, finding a space where I can connect with more humans and like in a more, almost intimate way, but like slightly more professional. I don't know how to say that.
We get that. I mean, I feel all meaningful connections are intimate because, and it's scary, which is why we also kind of want to avoid it sometimes.
It is.
But it's also why I want to embrace it.
Yeah, where's the thrill if it's not scary?
Yes, exactly. But then why organizational psychology or management psychology? You could have just gotten into clinical psychology or become a counselor.
A lot of people have come to me and been like, you should be a therapist.
And yeah. I'm one of them.
Yeah, I've always been the go-to therapist to a lot of people, which is probably why I decided not to
be a therapist professionally.
Is it because you have been delivering so many therapy sessions for free? How do I get money out of it?
No, I don't want to get money out of it. It's emotionally draining. But jokes aside, the reason why I went for organizational psychology is because I'm someone who constantly thinks of the big picture, and using organizational psychology to understand how a system works and what kind of changes I can make or can be made in general, which improves people's everyday lives. Because at the end of the day, like even in my personal life, I've seen my dad work really hard for different organizations over the years. And somehow, like initially, I used to think that
corporate world is not for me because so much of your life just goes into work. But then eventually I thought that instead of just defining the problem, I would like to define the problem as well as be part of the solution, hopefully.
That's good.
Yeah. So, which is why organizational psychology.
Because I also know that you, more than just MNCs, you want to work with startups and middle level organizations to start with and even further, because you are somebody, first, because I am a fan of your analytical skills. You're just so good with analyzing people, analyzing situations. You have more of a bird view on situations.
Yeah.
That actually helps define the kind of status quo and then the solutions, the interventions that probably could be beneficial for, let's say, the organization, let's say people. So for me, you know, organizational psychology or management psychology, although I'm not either from the psychology background, but it just came into me because I got into the training industry. It just happened so that I got into the training industry. Mm-hmm. And I loved it so much because I was able to see that I'm making an impact on people's life, be it just the corporate life, but I'm able to just add, even if it's 0.1%, and I loved that feeling. And that is how I started pursuing. I started learning more about psychology. I started learning about organizational psychology because I do know that I'm a person who would be in the who would like to be in the corporates more than just one-on-one conversations or sessions. And that is why, you know, organizational psychology happened to me. And my take has always been that whatever effort that I can put on helping people be the best version of themselves, mm-hmm. be it in personal life, be it in the professional life, I am all up for it. That I just get a kick out of it.
Yes, I can relate.
Yeah. So that is how organizational psychology happened to me. And with time, with my training experience, I felt like I need to have some, you know, in-depth study or the theory, theoretical part as well within me, which, because I was a commerce graduate, I had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I dived into the course and that is where we met.
Yes.
At the University of Nottingham.
Very glad.
Yeah. We were classmates and now we are housemates. Yes. So what do you think, like, you know, in your wide range of study, and I know that you are a nerd about this. What do you think about organizational psychology and how do you think, you know, it can really affect, be it in a positive or a negative way,
mm-hmm.
the corporates?
So I guess there are a few things. First of all, let's talk about the positives, I guess. Obviously, keeping humans at the center and then deciding to do everything else, be it deciding how profit works for an organization or what the long-term goals are for an organization, that is something which is obviously ethical, because it's something that I can deeply relate to on a philosophical level. What I mean by that is, if we are keeping the human experience in the center, and then trying to figure life out and the systems out, it intuitively makes sense to me. So that obviously is a personal take on it. Now, as a discipline, I would say that the fact that it is analytical, but at the same time, it is very good at incorporating the qualitative aspect of human experience, which is very important because, for example, from coming from a natural science background as an undergrad, I learned to think very objectively, right? Especially when it comes to expressing myself academically. Whereas this master's course almost taught me to think the other way of the spectrum, which is subjective way of thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I still remember our professor Fiona saying, you only become an actual psychologist when the answer to every other question is what?
It depends.
Yes.
That's the one thing we learned from our masters.
Yes, but it is obviously a very important phrase to learn and understand. Because there are so many things it depends on. And so, like, that subjective aspect of things, natural sciences or even maths alone cannot incorporate. But at the same time, using statistics as a medium, as a tool to understand human experience so that there is some amount of objectivity in it and you're not necessarily just saying things out of the blue, and there is some way of fact checking, putting it to use to actually make business decisions, is crucial, especially now that times are changing so much faster. There are two kinds of mistakes that we can make. One, which we, the mistakes that we have made because we did something. And the second, because we actually didn't do something. To decide as an organization to count it as a mistake that, oh, we didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. That is why this podcast exists.
Basically, things that they did not do is something that we do not consider at all. And so, but right now, because things are changing so much faster because of technology and there's opportunity at every corner, not doing something costs a lot.
Yeah.
And so it's important as researchers, as organizational psychologists, to help businesses figure out solutions which work out long term and which also is based on evidence and not just traditions.
True, true, true. And you know, so I remember in one of our discussions, which became super heated discussion,
that we were talking about organizational psychology, people have, as you're mentioning, people being the center of how corporates revolve and how, let's say, you know, the culture of the corporate should be, or keeping the human wellness in at the forefront. Organizational psychology would mean the culture aspect, the employee wellness, employee engagement, the learning aspect of it, people development, psychometrics, coaching, the HR as well. So a lot of things, different things define organizational psychology. And the discussion was that, is it a necessity or is it a luxury? And you were hell-bent on saying that it is a necessity.
Yes, I do remember.
Because where you are coming from, I agree on people being the center of things. But my take was that it is a luxury for the corporates at the moment, because corporates are, they're money-making machines. They are, they'll work on profits. They, whatever is getting them quick profits. But something like people development takes a lot of time. Human behavior change takes a lot of time. And that is why companies do not see that far That is one thing. And the second thing is why company also try to not see that far for the people, for their people, and consider them as actual, not just resources, but the real treasure of the company, is because people leave. People leave the companies. Now it's not the trend where employees will stick around for, let's say, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, like how older generations used to be. So investing so much in people development and people not sticking around, it is not a profitable thing for companies to do at all. And that is why it should be considered as a necessity, because of those employees, because of those people, the company is running. And if you invest in their development, they would provide you with the best efforts. But it is still considered as a luxury. And that is why organizational psychology as a discipline, it's not that popular.
So I would agree with a lot of what you said, but I would also disagree on some points. So the points that I would disagree with, you don't need people to stay around. Like, this is my personal opinion, obviously, but you don't need someone to work in your company for 15 years straight anymore for it to be fruitful for you to invest in the people experience. First of all, because one, I do believe that it's important to have the flux of having new people in and old people leave, or even if they're not that old, if they're finding better opportunities elsewhere. This is the kind of trend that I don't think you can personally try to stop as an organization, because of technology, everything has, and globalization, because everything has become so much more connected now that it's inevitable that people are going to keep on searching for better opportunities. And the fact that the person is searching for better opportunity is a good thing, because then you know that you've got someone who is actually driven towards their career. So I think that's actually a good thing instead of a bad thing. But also, the fact is that investing in people experience is not just about making the individual's experience better. It's also profitable for the company, because if, for example, you run an organization where you need people to be more creative, you need people to be more innovative. So if you want that, then it's important for you to have some amount of investment in figuring out what is a good way of building better team dynamics. Because it's not just an individual who's going to come up with the idea. It's usually a lot of people working together. And it is about relationship building. And the better your organization's culture is. And so either you can, as a leader, you can just let your culture take its course and for it being formed by itself. Or you can make a conscious decision of, like, putting an effort to build it a certain way, to put into, by that I don't mean enforce behavior where you're like, no, you have to do this and you have to do that, but it's about understanding different constraints and understanding what, okay, if I put in this policy, what does it actually mean? How is it going to affect the employers? And how is it going to affect the employees?
Okay,
so yeah, so for startups, I would say that's why they should invest in things like organizational culture.
Yeah, I agree.
For bigger corporates, on the other hand, they should invest in it, because it I think is financially profitable even in short terms. Mainly because any network of more than 150 people is hard to manage. by themselves. You can personally know 150 people, but not right. more than that, basically. And so nowadays we have companies which are so big and so much more powerful. Some of them are have more power and money than freaking countries.
It's not that the reason that these big corporates are actually spending money on making people experience better. It's not just because they care enough for the people. That too, yes. But at the same time, there is profit because they have a thing called employee branding. As an employer, what do they signify?
Yep.
They need the best talent to be attracted to them. So
yeah,
it makes sense for them even in short term.
Yes, that is true.
However, in my experience, what I have for employee branding, now that you have brought that term, what organizations do is, it is a tick in the box for them. That, you know, we invest this much in people development, we invest in so much of training and the learning, and we have all these different sort of wellness programs that we have for our employees and for employees' mental health and physical health. However, keeping people at the epicenter, that it is completely different than just a tick in the box. It is about real care. It is about understanding them and understanding what development or growth means to them. And accordingly, even as a leader, helping them through with what they want for themselves and see how it can, and then see how their development can align with the company's mission and vision, and not the other way around. And that is what the other way around is what happens in, not, I would not say in every company, but most of the company, that is how it is going. Because even if I say about the coaching industry, the companies that hire coaches, there are a lot of companies who have just, you know, who have hired a lot of coaches for their employees as just a gift for them. And just to help the employees be the best version of themselves. But there are a lot of companies who have invested in coaches, who have in-house coaches as well, to define the, or rather to make the company's vision and missions the employees' mission and vision. Not to get people in the same or align them together, but to get the employees or change the employees, you know, motivation to, which will exactly benefit the companies. So that is how, you know, it is still, again, I would say, as much as we would want to consider it to be a necessity, and which also, even as an organizational psychologist, I would want to say that it should be a necessity, because that is how you eventually would be able to progress. Although, so I was reading something lately, and it had, the words were very simple, but it was so powerful. So it said that, you know, somebody talking to one of the in-house organizational psychologists, that BHR saying, you know, or the leader saying that, why invest so much in people development? People leave anyway, which is the truth. People do. And to which the organizational psychologist replied, what if they don't? So it's like, you need to be optimistic about it. And although companies are money-making machines, and of course they have to run on profits because that is their nature, that is why it exists.
Yeah.
But then investing in employees in the longer term, not just help employees, but also the companies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so by the way, that is what our lovey-dovey discussion harmoniously ended with.
Yes, exactly.
No, I think discussions can end with no's as well. If
you can disagree with someone, be angry at them and still be like, okay, I do not agree with you on this, but let's do our next thing, and still be okay with each other.
Yeah.
That is something that is important as I think an organizational psychologist as well, because it's important to see different views in general. So, which is why I think I did enjoy the heatedness of the discussion as well.
Yeah. Moving on, you had gone to one of the meetups,
mm-hmm.
where all the famous names of business psychology industry had come in. You've had some great, great insights in there. And to an extent that I remember you mentioning that the future of you, there was somebody you were mentioning, right? There was somebody that what is the future of organizational psychology and how it is going to be. And then somebody mentioned that just learn about psychedelics.
Psychedelics
and chill. That is what the future with AI looks like.
Yes. Just have some psychedelics, figure out new ways of making meaning out of life, and chill, basically.
Yeah. But other than that, you were mentioning about a lot of, you know, different sort of approaches that people talked about.
The major thing, one of the major thing that stood out to me was how frustrated everyone seemed to be in terms of not being able to convince businesses to look at long-term goals and not just short-term ones.
I feel it is so sad that, first off, people have to convince the businesses that, okay, this is for your good. Look at it, damn it. What are you doing? And then you're complaining that your people do not stay. Your people not, you're not able to optimize their performance.
Yeah, that is true and quite ironic now that you talk about it. Yeah, but I don't know. I guess it is that necessity versus luxury conversation that we were having just right now. It's because it's just so hard to pin down exact numbers of how exactly a person learning something helped the company. Because it's not something like a learning experience. So much of it is also experiential.
Mm.
And it's not just... It can't just be captured by numbers alone. So it's very hard to evaluate long-term interventions as well, because you don't know if your intervention actually worked or if it was something else altogether.
Hmm.
And so it's just difficult to figure out how to invest in influencing almost businesses to do what is right in terms of people development.
Yeah, I think you're right, because there are so many factors involved in a person's persona, in a person's development, that it's not a return on investment particularly. We cannot just put a number on it. It's rather, I would say, you know, a return on expectation.
Hmm. Interesting.
Go on. Although, you know, like defining what expectations the leader or the manager have from their employees.
Mm-hmm.
And then building interventions and helping, you know, employees learn, helping them change their mindsets, their approach towards things,
mm-hmm.
Helping them define their own vision and mission for themselves,
mm-hmm.
Can probably lead to the expected outcomes, which were return on expectations, than return on investment.
Yeah, I understand what you are saying, and yeah, it's true. But then at the same time, I think it's difficult to manage expectations. The first thing that came to my mind is it's difficult to manage my own expectations within myself.
We have like literally the world of expectations that we expect out of ourselves.
Yes, but and imagine having multiple stakeholders and managing all kinds of expectations, because on one hand, what ends up happening is the managers and like the senior leaders essentially deciding that, you know what, our culture and our vision is this, and we need to make it this, and so this is what it is. But then, as an organization, are there tiny behaviors that the employees are showing which shows that that is the actual culture? Are there policies within the system which actually encourage that sort of a culture?
Mm-hmm.
If like you said, if there are just coaches who just end up saying that, okay, this is this, and then trying to almost brainwash employees, well, that is helping no one in the long run. Like in the short term, maybe for a while they'll get brainwashed, but then right now you don't want brainwashed employees. If you wanted someone who can just do mechanical things, well, there's technology. And AI is only getting better. So.
Yeah, I don't think so. That because people now are so, and the generation now, if you talk about Gen Y or millennials or Gen Z who are now entering the market, they are just so you know, audience, you understand, there are two generations talking here. So my point was that they are so informed that you cannot brainwash them into anything, because they understand, they can see through the bullshit. They can see through if you're not transparent enough with them. And if that happens, if you're trying to brainwash them into something that they do not really want, they'll leave again. And, you know, I'll just, so a very simple example I'll take for the listeners here, what we are discussing on right now, like about changing the culture or the people. Let's say there are leadership training programs that happens, and the leadership training programs are spot on. The leaders love it. But the return on investment, return on expectation is still not met.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? So there could be that we were also discussing the other day, there could be a possibility that the culture of the organization is not apt for the leader to use all the things that they have learned in their training program, that they have experience in the training program. Let's say the company wants the culture to be more innovative, more creative, more open, but there is very, you know, strict and rigid systems in the organization that leaders have to follow. And
exactly.
There's no space.
Yeah. You're just taking an individual out of almost like, let's say they stay in water. That you're taking a fish out of the water, teaching it to swim in some other medium, and then putting it back in water. Like, yeah. How do you expect a fish to change its whole environment at the same time?
Yes. Yes, totally. Spot on. So, that is why there comes the role of organizational psychologist. We study the mind and the heart of the corporates and understand that just, you know, trainings, blindless trainings would not help define the culture or the leadership of the companies. Rather, we need to get into the root cause and then build on interventions on that and cure the actual problem or the challenge which is going on in the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think technology can actually be a major help in it, because while you were talking, I was thinking that in terms of the newer generations not being brainwashed or organizations not having the capacity to do it, I think I would disagree there. Okay. Because in terms of just saying, like, the methods of influencing has kind of changed, right?
Hmm.
So now, using technology, you can, like, understand and analyze crazy amounts of data. And so using that itself, you can basically, the same way that social media tries to, you know, almost profit on and capitalize attention. And so the ways of influencing or brainwashing, if we are talking about the extreme, has kind of changed. And so it is still possible, and it has become almost more subtle, which is why it is all the more needed as humans and as organizational psychologists, I guess, to, like, kind of stay on top of things in terms of technology and self-awareness, because I think self-awareness is the major skill set, or, well, ability that you can kind of cultivate to understand and almost combat this kind of influence.
And I think self-awareness, especially after COVID, people have dived into it, because it was a difficult time for everybody, and people also got to reflect on what they really want, and is it like the 9-to-5 job and, you know, twice a week, Saturday, Sunday, weekend, mm-hmm. is that what life means to them,
mm-hmm.
or is there something more to it? People did dive into self-awareness a little bit more, introspect a little bit more, what do they want? Although, I mean, it's I think it's a journey for people as well.
What does life mean to you?
What does life mean to me?
Because you just used that phrase, and that made me think of the question, I guess.
I think that's a very deep question.
Yeah.
Let's exactly. Keep it for the next No, so for me, life would mean, because I am a person of experiences, of real life stories, I love exploring, and that is how I define life.
Uh-huh.
Wherein I am learning,
uh-huh.
every other time I am experiencing, exploring new aspects of life, new aspects of me.
Uh-huh.
And with that, I am able to make a positive impact, however, in whatever possibility that I can create, and keep helping people, just how I said, be the best version of themselves. So that's like the simplest answer that I could think of at the moment,
mm-hmm.
what life would mean to me.
It's quite interesting, relatable as well.
Yeah. So how would you define it for yourself?
I don't know, actually. I think that's a question that I'm okay with saying I don't know too, because there's just too much to explore, because, like, I obviously have, like, gone through quite a few of what definitions of what life is, biologically, philosophically, but then as a person, I don't know. I guess just being is life.
Okay. Let's take that. Just being is life. No, that is a very difficult question. And that is something that, you know, it changes. The meaning changes as you grow, as you live different phases of life. Oh, God. So, Tina, I think, you know, starting with why we started as management psychologists to ending with meaning of life. That is quite an ending, I think. And, you know, I have so many more. I think we can just go on and on in such conversations. We have so many more theories to, you know, discuss upon and even help our listeners understand more about organizational psychology, that we just wouldn't stop. And there are, like, I think there are going to be multiple episodes of us. I always love having such discussions with you, because that is, you know, who we are. We disagree in so many points, and now we have learned how to disagree. It's just amazing. It's very insightful. It's very, even as professionals, we learn more about our own disciplines, and you bring such great knowledge about different things in the picture. I put in my all the you know, experiences and skills, knowledge that I've had until now. So yeah, it's always a lovely discussion.
Yes, it was actually fun.
And there you have it, another episode of Psych and Success, packed with insights and real-world advice on business psychology, Gen Z, evolving workplace dynamics, culture, AI, and so much more. If you want to stay ahead of the curve and dig deep into the fabric of modern work, you know what to do. Hit that follow button, share this podcast with your network, and drop us a review on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you tune in. Your feedback not only supports us, but also helps us connect with more inquisitive minds like yours. By the way, if you're looking to get in touch with today's guest, I've got you covered. Check out the description for their contact details. And if you feel inspired to chat directly with me about these compelling subjects, you can book a quick call through my Calendly or shoot me an email. All the links are in the description. This is your host, Kritika Kashyap, reminding you that the future of work is here and it's evolving fast. So let's explore it together. Until next time.